Privyet, everybody, all my comrades. It is time for another episode of the NASA vending machine, or is it indeed the Soviet space program vending machine? There's coffee in the Star City vending machine. I'm Jason Snell, and I'm joined, as always, on our discussions of For All Mankind and its spinoff, Star City, by Dan Morin. Hello.
Здравствуйте, Jason.
It's good to hear from you, and good to be back. Now, they dropped both episodes, so like we're back. We literally just recorded our episode about episode one. Now we're going to talk about episode two, because like Apple, we're going to just drop these episodes right away. But they are two separate episodes, and I thought they deserved separate episodes of our podcast. So we're back for episode two of Star City, season one. As far as we can tell, there aren't any episode titles. If there are, we didn't get them, so we don't know. We're just going to call it episode two. So this episode begins with some space action.
Yeah.
They're in the space capsule coming back from the moon. The first woman to walk on the moon. It's very exciting. They got to do a deorbit burn. Her partner points out that being first didn't protect Gagarin.
Yeah.
It's true. He didn't become immortal.
I looked that up at some point, yeah, because he dies, and there are many conspiracy theories apparently about his death, which was in a training, like a piloting accident, basically.
Yeah, but they do this deorbit burn. The service module SEP fails, but and there's a very gallows line about state funerals, and it's like the state would never pay for funerals.
Don't be ridiculous. The state would never pay for our funerals.
But they're like, don't worry about it. The cord is going to break when it heats up. It'll be fine. And it does. They end up 450 kilometers off course in a birch forest in Siberia where there's a big old bear.
That was, I have to admit, that one took me by surprise.
Russian bear is here now.
It's a rough time. We got to, you know what? We got some bangs and shimmies. We made it down. Come out of the capsule. She's like kissing the ground, basically. And there's a bear.
It's a giant bear. Yeah. What I really like is that the next scene is literally people are picking them up and there's a dead bear.
Well, we hear the gunshot really briefly because Valya's
looking
for
the
gun.
She's like, get the gun, not the flares. They have the flares, and she's like, it's get the gun. And so they obviously.
It does make you wonder what the gun was for if they didn't plan for bears, right? Like,
I don't know.
Somebody goes off script and.
or is it like if you're lost and you're going to die, maybe you kill yourself instead? Yeah. Maybe it's something like that. I don't know. I don't know. You're landing out in the woods,
Be prepared, I guess.
Yeah, if you're going to be 450 kilometers off course, you might need a gun to shoot a bear. I mean, which they did, so it makes sense. So this is now. Remember, this is our character Belikova, who is the last minute fill in for the Golden Girl cosmonaut who was who is murdered by the KGB under false purposes, but it's life in the Soviet Union. And she went off script when she was on the moon. And it leads to I think, really great and chilling scene where she's put in a truck with the deputy chairman and Ludmilla, our KGB handler, co-star of the show, Anna Maxwell Martin, and a woman who looks almost exactly like her. Just amazing. She's like, she can be the new...
Don't you recognize her? This is Anastasia Belikova.
Yeah. She's you and you're nobody now, and to Belikova's credit, she's like, it will never happen again, because I think that moment is very much like, it's really interesting, right? Because you could say, well, they're evil and they'll just kill whoever, but it's not quite that. And in this case, I think what Ludmilla is doing here is gauging her, right?
Yeah.
It's gauging her. But the presence of the double sends a message, which is you don't actually have any leverage over us.
Yes, you can be replaced.
Don't forget that. But she's like, it won't ever happen again, I swear. And they are inclined to trust her to a point, we'll see in this episode.
We'll see. Yep. Yeah.
But she's not going to get the gunshot to the head that her predecessor did.
They'd like to still use her if they can, but they are also perfectly willing to cut their losses if
they
feels
have
like
to.
She's more trouble than she's worth.
Exactly. And she says, we'll give you a parade and send you to Paris. But you have to get married.
You have to get married.
Guess who you're going to get married to? It's Sasha.
It will be a beautiful Soviet wedding. Congratulations.
Oh, it's a beautiful Soviet wedding. Yeah. May I ask who I am supposed to marry is an amazing line, isn't it?
Yep. And I also don't know who plays the deputy chairman, but he looks super familiar, but I really like that character who's kind of we saw him in episode one, too.
He's our apparatchik.
Yeah,
for
exactly.
The show.
Our functionary. I was looking him up, but again, we don't have subtitles on our version, so I couldn't get the exact. I think it's Tarasov. There is a Soviet politician whose name was Mikhail Petrovich Tarasov.
Maybe it's him.
So maybe it's him or someone inspired by him, but I enjoy him as the apparatchik.
Yeah. It's good to have that. It's like the arm of the state. Now, Lumil is really running things, but he is the decision maker, I guess, out there if he needs to be for
Brezhnev's right hand, essentially.
For the space program, right? He's probably the guy that Brezhnev would say, like, what's going on with the space program? And it goes to that guy. But you just got to make sacrifices. You're going to marry Sasha. That's how it's going to be. Ludmilla calls for Irina again. So Irina, not completely written out after failing to cold-bloodedly shoot a cosmonaut in the head. I enjoy the fact that Irina's standing there, and I think it's a test, which, you know, Ludmilla, we find out in this episode, does a lot of, it's a lot of mind games and a lot of tests with Ludmilla.
Yep.
But she is sizing up Irina, and I think it's very funny. As a journalist, she's standing in the room, mm-hmm. and Irina starts reading the files on Ludmilla's desk. And I mean, I've done that. Like, you learn to read upside down and see what's on the desk. And she gets kind of upbraided for doing that. But she says, you seem very ambitious and talented and could be of service. And she's like, yeah, I do want to be of service. She's like, yeah, well, you know. You
except for that one thing that you won't do.
Shoot that one thing. Yeah. But I'm going to send you to Paris with the cosmonauts. You're going to stick with them and you're going to watch them. Yeah.
Another good moment here when Belikova goes to talk to Korolev and is like, oh, are you going to come to Paris with us? And he's like, I can't leave the USSR.
Yeah.
For my own safety, or so they say.
Yeah.
Another indication he is not entirely happy
lot in life. He is a state secret, and that means that he is trapped. Also, speaking of the chief designer, speaking of Korolev, still wants to go to Venus. Sergey, there's nothing at Venus. You don't want to go there. But as once again told, lunar base is now the top priority since the Americans stole our plans. We can't let them beat us to the moon. This is going to lead us, for all mankind viewers know, to the the competing bases on the moon that we see in For All Mankind, which are very dramatic things happen up on the moon. But it's this typical thing, which is he's aware of what's possible and they don't care. So they're like, you're going to move the launch up. Can it be ready in a few months? He's like, it's more than a year away. And they're like, and I thought this was really a great line by our apparatchik, who's like, you got as much money as you need. You got as many people as you need, but you don't have more. You don't have time.
Yeah.
So it's like, that's the one where you're like, money, people, you got it. Time, you don't have it because we're in a race with the Americans. And he's like, this is absurd. You know, you'll kill all those men and women. And they're like, we believe in you. We believe in you. It's like, oh God, no, don't say that. Don't do it that way. But I think it's really interesting, right? That it's like the space race. This is the space race. They are now willing to give Korolev all the money and people because this has become a thing, a point of pride, which is true to history, right? Like Khrushchev was not interested in the space program and Korolev, like, I want to put, and they barely got Sputnik up there. And then Sputnik went up there and they're like, oh, so this is good for us. And then it got more attentions because it's like, now it serves the state's purposes in some way.
The state once again comes out on top.
Yeah. And that's what's going on here. No pressure. You're going to blow up a bunch of cosmonauts, but you have to get us to the moon base. And this is that For All Mankind thing, right? This is the acceleration, which is now we're really in it. This is a real space race happening. And how does it happen so fast? This is one of the reasons it is going to go so fast, is that they are going to plow money and people into this, but not time, right? You do not have time.
Yeah, I like, there's a scene later on where they're sort of like brainstorming, like, okay, well, we got to, how do we do a moon base in the time that they've given us? And they're all like, this is impossible. We can't do this. Like, it just would require too much work. And of course, Sergei is the one who once again comes up with like, could we just put some like inflatables up there?
Yeah. And everyone's and call it a base? You know? Yeah, that's a great scene. It's a very, you know, Apollo 13 kind of thing, which is like, let's work the problem, people. And Sergei's like, yeah, we could do some inflatables next, you know, attached to the lander and call it. And everybody else is like, no, it's like you want to do, yeah, you want us to be intense and all that. And Korolev sees in Sergei in that moment like, ah, he's willing to be creative.
Yeah.
And to understand the problem that we're trying to solve here, which is not, this isn't the right way to do it. It's like, we have to do it.
Yeah.
How do we do that? So yeah, we'll follow that thread in a second with them, because those are our two big threads, I think, is like chief designer and trip to Paris. And this is where we get the scene where he says, I can't leave. I'm too valuable. Belikova wants to volunteer for the next mission. And he's like, no, you're too valuable now as a PR asset. You are the first woman on the moon. So you're going to be famous, but that's what you have to be. And he's kind. He says, you remind me of Gagarin. Oh, that's nice. So Irina's going to go to Paris. It's a party in Paris with Belikova. She's talking to her daughter about this. They go to Paris. There's a crowd at the hotel, but it seems a little sad. Seems a little sad somehow.
There's some great bits in this this whole section where, you know, so Belikova's being feted at this party. And everybody's taking pictures of her. And there's a great moment where she turns around and you see all the camera flashes showing her shadow. And she is envisioning this shot that we saw from her of being on the moon and seeing her shadow. Prior to this, I will say, we get the Tanya, who is Valya's wife, and Sasha have a moment in the elevator together. Where they try, you know, Sasha's trying to like put the moves on and she's like, no. I also like, there's a great moment there where they go to the elevator and Ludmilla is talking to Irina and like, do we have a microphone in the elevator? And everyone's like, oh no. Yeah, we should have done that.
Yeah, we should have done that.
But Tanya turns him down basically. He's like, look, I think, you know, you're getting married now, right? Mm-hmm. You're getting married to Belikova. So like, we should probably stop this. Put an end to this affair that we've been having.
Yeah. So it's bad. It's bad for him on even more levels now that he's got to get married.
Yeah.
I enjoy Irina is working on like putting the bugs in the hotel room. That's part of her job, is to put the bugs there. So it's like the other side of the finding bugs in the hotel room. Yep. This is the
lighter
placing.
And the behind the picture frame.
Yeah. That's kind of fun. Ludmilla sweeps in and takes Irina away. Because the courier who got the moon base plans to the Americans won't talk and you speak German, so come with me. So we're going to have another tangent here. But like the French give a toast to Belikova. She is the toast of Western society as well as Soviet society. And this is where she sees her shadow. She's upset. She thinks of the moon. And then we get a nice moment where Sasha leads her out of the hotel. There's a really
nice shot.
He's
not a total schmuck.
No. I mean, yeah, he's not. There's a nice shot with the old cars and the Paris architecture. And, you know, they've done, it's a really nice VFX kind of moment of we're in the 60s in Paris here. And they go to a club. He gets them some drinks. I should say he like steals somebody's drinks, but he gets them some drinks.
He does some dancing. He's kind of a goof, you know. He's having a good time, but he's like he's clearly. There's another part that gets alluded to here, right? I think it's earlier in this episode when he's talking to the Korolev, and he's like, "Well, when do I go up?" And Korolev's like, "Well, you know, you're not in, you know, not yet or whatever." And he's like, "Oh, I know why." And it's suggested that his grandfather was a religious adherent of some kind. It's not specified, but essentially that he was something that would not have been approved by the state.
Maybe.
And that he thinks basically that's why he has been you know, kind of not, if not blacklisted, then at least like,
but he is a cosmonaut. So like, but
right,
yeah,
exactly. This is his perceived.
Yeah, yeah,
he
yeah.
thinks this is why no one will ever pick him.
Yeah.
When possibly the answer is you're a bit of a jerk at times. Maybe that's a bigger issue.
So, also while this is all going on, our unhappy astronaut couple is back at the hotel. She's like, she's putting on perfume.
I'm putting on perfume.
Yeah, he's thinking about Yana, who
to us, yeah.
is gone. But she does kiss him, so it's like maybe they're gonna like put this thing back together. The when Sasha, a woman comes to okay, so Anastasia Belikova, somebody spills a drink on her, and so she goes into the bathroom, and a woman comes into the bathroom and says, "We can get you out. The Americans have a place for you." And she says, "I will never betray my country," and goes out. She's like, "I think it's time to go." They go back to the hotel. The sad wife sees Sasha and Belikova return, and we see the woman from the bathroom approaches and says, we tested her. And she refused. So she's not an American operative. She's a Soviet operative who is testing her loyalty. It's like, good.
Yeah. Good. Yeah. She's a KGB asset. That I thought was a good moment.
Good.
Like,
twist,
I kind of wondered, right? Like, well, sure. Of course the CIA would be interested in getting her to defect, right? Like, this makes perfect sense. And that there's a scene earlier on when they arrive at the hotel in Paris, and the shot of them arriving at the hotel is from inside a car. Across the street.
Yes.
Kind of subtle, but like, so you're like, oh, well, somebody's watching them.
Yeah. But who?
And so, yeah, exactly. And so you're
probably,
well, of course, the Americans.
The Americans really are also watching.
Yeah. Probably them too, but we don't really see them here.
Right. And and notice, by the way, that they sneak out to the club, but
yes,
there's an operative
I love that
at the
moment.
Club anyway. Right.
Yes. Yeah.
Right. So they weren't really, they were followed or tracked or whatever. They knew
give
where they
them
were going.
A little bit of a lead, so they think they have more freedom than they actually do.
And they're like, they're okay with them sneaking out. That's not the problem. Like, that's the, like, we're not, you know, whatever, but we're gonna check you out here. A little earlier, we had a scene where, so the following Sergei and Korolev, like, Sergei is cooking dinner for one.
God, I love Sergei. It reminded me how much I like this character because he's making himself some like schnitzel.
Yeah.
He's like,
he's going to town.
He's set his little table for himself. Yeah. He's got a candle.
And Korolev comes in. He's like, you expecting somebody? He's like, nope.
No. He's listening to music. He checks. Yeah. Korolev looks at his books. He's like, oh, I see you're reading Fyodorov. And he's like, yeah, I know. It's forbidden.
Forbidden.
So my note says like, he reads forbidden books and engineering plans, as we learn. He's just a big nerd.
Yeah. So he says, you know, how did you know when we were having the trouble that the S-band switch was in within reach of her and all that? And he's like, well, I memorized it. And he's like, we changed the design. He said, yeah, I read the engineering reports. And it's very much this dialogue here is like, this is Korolev saying, this guy is really bright and thinks outside the box. And I need him for what we will about find out. He's like, shall we go for a walk? And I like that he like literally leaves the record playing and all the lights are on. And he's like,
what about the schnitzel?
It's just sitting out on the counter.
Sitting out on the counter.
But he's got, you know, the chief designer came for you. So we're going to go. And he takes him downstairs to, as I wrote, wherever that is, like downstairs. He's got a like a place where that's like his little lair. That has got,
it's like the Air and Space Museum in Washington, but the Soviet version where everything's under tarps in
it's
a basement.
It's in a basement. The ghosts of past missions. And he says, now Brezhnev and all of his people just want the moon, but we can't stop there. We need to think big. We need to think about Venus. And Sergei's like, but Brezhnev was like, I'll persuade, leave Brezhnev to me, right?
Yeah.
But, and this is the flip side of, this happens all the time in real life too, where it's like, somebody says no to a project, and the person's like, okay, we won't do it. And then they go back to the office and they're like, we're going to do it.
Yeah. It's the skunk and, works, right? And, he's like, we're just going to
not
do
tell
this.
Anybody. And then it'll, trust me, we'll do it eventually. It's just like, let's just work on it now. And then I'll work on the getting the approval, but we need to move ahead. So he's like, we're going to proceed in secret down in this basement. And he says, they'll give me anything I want as long as they think it's for the lunar base. I love it.
Essentially, not exactly embezzlement, but like, misappropriation, yeah. Because he says this to him at some point, like, by the way, if you want to do this, you know, this is probably treason and misappropriation.
We are misusing state property and yeah. disobeying
the
orders.
The penalties
consequences could be
quite
severe.
Severe.
Yeah, it's really good. But he's like, oh, but you have more senior engineers. And he said, do not underestimate yourself, Sergei. This is that moment of like, no, I believe in you, but it's dangerous. And it's one of those punch the air kind of moments. Like, when do we start? Now.
Yeah.
I love it. I love it. It's so great. Hey, Dan, speaking of things that aren't great, let's go to Germany. Arena has been brought by Ludmilla. And she's like, translate for me. And they're talking to the courier. And one of the things that's communicated to this German courier is, let's hope this goes better than when you. He's like, I fought in World War II, in the Great Patriotic War, and we were Kursk. And he said, well, let's hope it goes better for you this time than it did at Kursk, right? Because it's like tweaking the Nazis about.
She says something about like I was driving a tank.
Yeah,
over Nazi
Ludmilla's
bodies.
Got a whole story about like she's just out there doing stuff, and I have no doubt doing stuff, just crazy stuff in World War II for
also,
the Soviet Army.
It's not specified here, but one of the things I wondered about was whether or not Ludmilla does speak German.
Well,
part of this was a
test. You were wondering that, okay, because it is great, and she's so we've got Irina translating. The interrogation continues in another scene. She's like, I'm gonna leave for 10 minutes, and then when I come back we're gonna shoot him in the head. So it's like, I'm gonna give you a little motivation here. So Irina is like, you need to do this. They're going to shoot you. And he's like, no, I don't know anything. She gets the coffee pot and throws coffee on him.
Hot, boiling,
scalding
water
coffee.
Yeah.
He's like, no. And then he breaks. He's like, look, I don't know who he is, but he lives in Reichstrasse. We couldn't. And then he says, we couldn't get anything into Star City.
I told him we couldn't get anything into Star City. But what were you trying to get in?
What do
you
mean?
I don't know. I never knew.
What do you mean anything? He's like, no, it never happened. No, they never told me what they wanted to smuggle in. Please, my wife doesn't know anything about this. And, you know, so Ludmilla comes back, and of course she speaks German.
Yeah.
Of course she does.
Yeah.
This has all just been a test.
Yeah.
And it's
your
like,
wife,
my wife
won't
didn't
see
know.
You for a while.
And it's like, she's not going to see you for a long time, friend.
But it doesn't shoot him in the head. So no. This is what's interesting about the progression of Irina here, right? Which is that we can see how she becomes the person that she does, doing things that she thinks is, you know, hey, look, I've got to throw scalding coffee on this guy, which is awful. But if I don't do this, she will kill him. I know she will kill him. I've seen her do it, right? And so this is how you convince yourself, right, to do these terrible things. Is like, I'm doing this for this guy's sake, but also you're torturing him,
right? And Ludmilla, is you know could do this all herself, but she thinks Irina has potential, so it becomes a test for Irina. That's where we end up here. Let's see. The wedding. Everybody loves a Soviet wedding. They get their photos taken.
They do their little vows.
Well, they don't forget. We also have Belikova's father comes. He seems terrible.
Yeah,
her father is awful.
Yeah, God. Sasha introduces himself, and he's like, you're the one my daughter is marrying. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
stand up
just
straight.
Walks away.
And he walks. Yeah. Walks out. We don't have to get married, he says, and she's like, well, actually, I think we do.
Yeah. But I like that. Again, this is we have come around on Sasha, right? Because he's got a heart of gold, I think, is the thing. He's like, at the end of the day, he's like, I don't. You know, if you don't want to do this, we'll figure it
out,
right?
He's not a bad guy. He's cheating on, you know, he's cheating with women who are married to other men who are his comrades in the cosmonaut corps and all of that. But like, yes, and he doesn't want to marry this woman, but he's also, I think, not an awful person.
Yeah.
I enjoy that the chief designer offers his dacha for the yes. honeymoon, basically. Yeah. But he also admits she's too valuable to the state now as a symbol, so she can never go into space again, and I don't have the heart to tell her, he says. Yeah. And we get the wonderful, it is an equitable union based on love, understanding, and respect. Hooray. At which point I realized Sasha Polivanov.
Polivanov.
Which makes me believe, and unless I'm proven elsewhere that I'm wrong, that Sasha and Belikova are the parents of the Polivanov who was the governor of the Mars colony in For All Mankind.
Yeah.
I think they're his parents.
I think you're right.
And it tracks, right? Like, famous cosmonaut parents. She was the first woman on the moon. They have a kid. The kid ends up being a cosmonaut. He ends up politically connected, which is why the premier of the Soviet Union knew him and supported him, and why Irina would have her plan of like, well, maybe you'll be in charge of the Soviet Union, which happened in the last season of For All Mankind in season 5. So it kind of tracks. So failing somebody saying, no, it's absolutely not, I think it is. I think they're Polivanov's parents. I think that guy.
Yeah. Interesting, yeah. Because we know that they, you know, he and Irina, the son passes, connects with Irina later.
Right.
You know, and so do they cross paths here as well, maybe?
Yeah.
And maybe their history goes back a little further.
We'll do a footnote here, which is to say, as we record these episodes, we have not seen the last two episodes of season 5 of For All Mankind, even though you have, listener. So if it's all revealed and it's a huge plot twist or whatever, we don't know.
We didn't know.
Because we're recording this out of order. It's weird. We don't have the screeners of those, but we do have the screeners of Star City. It's a behind-the-scenes thing. Anyway, so don't write us if you're like, how did you miss the fact that there was this huge scene in Episode 9 that explained that Irina knew his parents? I'm like, well, we haven't seen that yet. Probably not, but you never know. And then the last scene here is Ludmilla is like, I want to know what everyone is doing and thinking. We are now on the front line.
Right.
Let's begin.
So what are they trying to get in to Star City is the question.
Yes.
Was it a bomb? Was it
we don't know.
A person? Who knows?
We don't know, yeah. But that is the big breakthrough is it's not just like the connections of the courier. It's that they are trying to smuggle something into Star City, and what does that mean? So they're going to pull that thread, Cold War spy intrigue, to go along with the political intrigue, the engineering intrigue, the personal intrigue. Like, I'm enjoying this show so far. I think it's a lot of fun.
I the tension is very good in this show. Like, and even though this is one of the challenges with doing, it's not quite a prequel or a sidequel, I don't know.
Yeah.
You know, it's tricky because we know a lot of what happens in the wider world,
right?
But we don't know what happens in the confines. And one of the things I wanted to comment on, which we didn't really talk about, is the opening credits of the show,
yeah,
which
really
are very
like
different from the opening credits of For All Mankind. Basically, you know, remind you, this is kind of a, if not in fact, walled off city. Essentially a walled-off city, right? This is a city unto itself that is heavily secured and even more than the rest of the Soviet Union.
There's nothing there except this thing.
Exactly.
Right?
And these people cannot leave.
Yeah.
And as we know, things don't really come in. So, you know, everybody is dealing with the tensions of being stuck here for better or worse.
Right. Oh, well, okay. So that is episode 2 of Star City. We will be back next week and cover episode 3. Huh. I think it comes after 2, so that's, I guess, what we'll do.
Convenient.
But until then, Thank you for listening to our podcast about the extended For All Mankind universe now. Until next time, Dan, do svidaniya.
Do svidaniya, Jason.